This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Infinite Consciousness First Week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and today we have with us Steve Anderson, who I met through Diane Ladd. We had her on a couple of months ago. So how are you, Steve?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for being on the show tonight. So how did you come to know Diane? I forgot to ask you that earlier.
It's probably been 12, 14 years ago. I met her at our local spa here. Her and her daughter were doing a presentation, and I was doing sessions, and after-dinner sessions, and I bumped into them and did a session on both her and her daughter, Laura Dern, and just have stayed connected ever since. We talk two or three times a month and hang out a lot together over the phone.
She's an amazing woman, isn't she?
She is an amazing woman, yes.
So tell us a little bit about your background before we start the interview so people know who you are and what it is that you've done in your life.
Sure. I'm a registered nurse. I'm a native Californian. I live in San Diego. I spent 28 years in the Navy. I started out as a hospital corpsman and got out of the Navy and got my degree in nursing and ended up retiring about 10 years ago as a Navy Nurse Corps commander. In 1991, while I was working here in San Diego at the Navy Hospital, I was basically forced into a workshop that I really didn't want to attend called Healing Touch. My friend was coordinating it, and as she didn't have enough seats, I showed up under her orders, and my life has changed ever since. So it was within a year and a half, I became an instructor of Healing Touch. That was in 1992. And after I retired in 97, I was teaching Healing Touch all over the country, in Europe and in Canada, and having a full-time practice. And I let go of my work in Healing Touch about a year and a half ago, and have been doing my own thing since that time.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that interests me is the Navy was teaching you alternative medicine, basically, yet Western medicine won't fully accept it. I found that kind of ironic.
You know, it's not the Navy that that asked me to teach all over the country in Navy hospitals. It's the people in the Navy. So the people who make up the Navy are people like you and me, and some people object to integrative alternative medicine, and some people are wide open. So I certainly, as I was teaching hands-on healing in Navy hospitals, I certainly had my little battles sometimes where either commanding officers or chaplains or nurses didn't like what I was doing. But usually if I had the commanding officer open to it, that's where the buck stopped and I could do whatever I needed to do. And most of the commanding officers, it was, hey, if this is going to help our nursing staff and if it you know, provides a service to our patients and it's not going to hurt anybody, let's go ahead and give it a shot. So a lot of doors were opened just by the people who were in charge and appreciated the work.
What kind of work were you doing? Was it Reiki or was it EFT? What kind of work were you doing?
It's Healing Touch. It's hands-on energetic healing. The website is healingtouch.net, and it's really a variety of techniques of Dr. Brujoy's work, some Rosenvier, some Barbara Brennan. The founder of Healing Touch had taken lots of different types of workshops, and she was a registered nurse. Her name was Janet Minkin. And she started teaching in a community college in the late 80s, just sharing what she had learned. And some, also, Therapeutic Touch was involved in the early days. And put together the certification program where it was learning how to balance people energetically with the hands and with intention. So it's kind of unique in itself.
assume that some of the listeners have no idea what you're talking about, and see if you can walk us through some of the techniques. So I like for people to be able to go away from here with something they can use at home.
Sure. It usually involves somebody coming in and saying, I've got a headache, I've got an ache or pain, I've got an issue. And the practitioner does a little assessment, asking questions of history of what's going on. It's kind of based on the nursing model, but Healing Touch is open to anybody who wants to walk in the doors. And then you have them lay down or sit down in a chair, and you actually, what you're trained to do in the first level of training of Healing Touch is how to assess the energy coming off the person's body with your hands. Mm-hmm. And you can feel heat, you can feel prickly, you can feel thickness, different areas of things that feel out of balance. And then
can an average person do this? Average people how to do this, or do they have to be sensitive?
We find that about 95-98% of those who walk into the class, the first class, they learn how to be sensitive.
They're forced like you?
Yeah. I didn't feel anything. But that first night when I went home, my younger son had a headache. He was about 13 years old, and I said, "Hey Dan, sit down. Let me try this little thing I learned today." He said, "No, Dad, where's the aspirin?" Well, I outranked him, and I said, "Sit down." So I had a resistant client. I didn't really know what I was doing. I followed directions, and within about 8 or 10 minutes his headache disappeared. And I really couldn't feel energy as I was doing it. That took me a while. I was so linear, logical in my nursing background. But I saw results from the very beginning. I felt it in the workshop that, gee, here's somebody waving their hand over me or just barely touching me, and I'm feeling much more relaxed. And when I did the same thing to the other person, they were feeling some type of shift or change in relaxation and more comfortable. So, I taught for close to 15 years about 300 workshops, and just time and time and time and time again, you get people who walk in who are either forced by their spouses or they're curious or, you know, they're not really sure what it's all about, and they walk away like, oh my goodness, anybody can do this. And it's a natural, innate ability. And if you have a desire to want to learn how to do energy healing, most people are capable of doing it.
Did you have some extreme successes with it, like healings of cancers or tumors or something like that, heart disease?
Lots of various different experiences, all the way from the simple things, and it's not only the physical, but emotional, the mental, but certainly physical. I had a few cases where people were newly diagnosed with breast cancer, mm-hmm. and they were about ready to go and, you know, have a biopsy or surgery, and by the time they had the biopsy or the surgery, that there was little to nothing there. I've had success with newly diagnosed brain tumors. They seem to be real receptive to this type of work. I had one lady who had cancer of the pancreas and it metastasized to the liver, and she had a few weeks, you know, to live, and she really, really wanted to go visit her newly married daughter over in Korea, and so I was doing weekly sessions on her, and she ended up going over. Her daughter had a baby, so she waited, and she found out she was pregnant, so she waited until she actually delivered. And 18 months later, she went to go and visit her. She was still doing fairly well. Tumors were shrinking, both in the liver and in the pancreas. After she came back from Korea, it was like, okay, I'm ready, and she died within a few weeks. But she stayed with it for a year and a half. So from her will of wanting to see her daughter and the new grandkid, and I suspect that you know, being open to this work and balancing her out, and the work is really about allowing the body to take what it needs to take where it needs to take it. And the body is this remarkable healing mechanism. We're always self-correcting, self-healing with every breath we take. Billions and billions of biochemical reactions every moment. And what energy healing seems to do is relaxes the tissue, balances the stuck energy in the body so that the body can do a better job at its own self-correcting, which it does all the time. So it's that type of a process, and it doesn't work all the time, but it almost always at least takes the edge off of things, and sometimes there's remarkable recoveries.
Have you guys conducted any studies at the Navy? Have they looked at the long-term effects of it?
Well, not necessarily the Navy, but Healing Touch International. They have their own coordinator for research. And if you go to that webpage, healingtouch.net, there's pages and pages of research that's been done, conducted, some of it conducted by National Institutes for Health and other reliable types of research. So lots of nurses have used Healing Touch in their research studies. And it's been around about 16, 17 years. So it took about 6 or 7 years before we could really get competent practitioners and people who really wanted to do the research, but there's some good studies out there now.
Do you have to get into any kind of altered state of mind? How do you go about placing your intention?
Yeah,
your intention?
Yeah, the intention is it's getting what we call just in a centered state, just in a quiet state, and the intention is really highest good to highest good. Honoring and respecting that person's field of energy, that person's body, that person's soul and highest good is going to take what it needs to take, where it needs to take it, in the exact dose that it needs to take it for, whatever it needs to do at this time in that person's life. So we talk about in Healing Touch being in the allow mode as a practitioner, just allowing. So it's not pushing energy in, it's not forcing energy in, it's not thinking, oh, I think you need something here and it needs to be red or orange or this vibration. Mm-hmm. It's really being this open conduit and just allowing the innate divine intelligence of each person just work with each other.
Now, do you touch them or do you hold your hands for a certain amount of time or do you move your hands? What do you do?
Yeah, all the above. So when you do touch, it's just a light touch. So it's just a connecting. So they can have, you know, tons of clothes on, jackets, and they can be underneath a blanket and light touch. And or you don't touch and you're above the body, anywhere from a couple of inches to thousands of miles away. A lot of my practice over the last 10 years, I have clients that I work with from a distance. So wherever I am, I work on them wherever they are, and so it's not necessary that you have the touch, but you can certainly work at it from a couple inches to several thousand miles away.
Now, what at some point in time, I think a year or two ago, you decided to go into spirituality training. What switched you onto that?
Well, I've been developing and evolving that way over the last several years. It's, you know, I taught all these workshops about technique and the certification program, Healing Touch, and it's very structured and where you put your hands and your placement and this and that. And the more I did it, the more I realized that none of that's really important of where I put hand placement and the technique process. It's really about the practitioner's soul and their state of consciousness. And so over the years, I certainly have done lots of readings of other people and other authors and healers and just kind of came up with, especially when I was doing distance work, when I was first working with people from a distance, and I've been doing that for 12, 14 years, I would act as if they were on my massage table, and I would place my hands on the proper places and hold and wait and move to the next spot and act as if they were on the table. And the last 6, 7 years, I just found that really wasn't necessary, that I could just set my intention and watch myself do that. And then the last couple of years, it's just even totally getting away from a technique, and it's really coming from my grace to their grace, to this innate wisdom within each of us. This, you know, there's many names: the Christ consciousness, the grace, the divinity, the spirit, the soul, the golden thread that connects us all, and just holding that space, knowing that that they're going to take what they need to take. And over the last couple of years, I don't even focus on them anymore. I get a phone call or I get a request, and I just go into my meditation of my connection of my God consciousness to the best of my ability. And that I'm getting, you know, as good or better results from that. It's simple for me to do. I can do it in a moment, and people are really responding to that. So I've gone from this very detailed, very structured process, which was just something I had to do. It was really important for me to evolve the way I've proceeded here. And who knows what I'll be doing next year. But that's where I am right now.
Did you have a single moment where something, where you had an epiphany, or did it just graduate over time?
Yeah, it's been a learning process for me. I've not had the bolt of lightning hit me. I've not had the voice come to me saying, "Thou shalt do this." And I'm just a simple guy who, most of my life, secluded myself and, you know, did the best job I could and kind of hid out. And I've just kind of gotten pushed out more out into the public with all the teaching that I've done. And I'm real good at keeping things simple and not to complicate things. But it's been a learning process. And I've certainly been on the table many, 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 many times. And every time, I mean, I had a session today with a friend who we do exchanges with each other. And getting off the table, I call it my natural state. It's just this absolute at peace and no stress and relaxed and coherency and clarity. And so I get that every time I receive a session, but I certainly come to that space as I'm doing the work too. I mean, I just love connecting with that inner awareness within me that, you know, and that's my belief system, that I'm really coming from the Christian point of view, where God created it all, and once God saw what he created, he said it was good. And I just feel that there is not dualism, that there is only one power, and it's the grace of this consciousness of God that, and then we are very powerful, and we create all these other dramas and traumas, and we make them real in our lives, and we're real good at doing that, and we're born into that consciousness. And I'm just getting clearer and clearer that it's just grace, it's just all the oneness of this four-less life force, or this immortality, this God consciousness of everything. And I just am more and more attracted to that, and that just makes more and more sense to me as I continue doing this work.
How do you think non-duality has to do with moralistic issues in the world? Do you think, you know, there's these two schools of thought that there's no thing to fix because we're not really here, so what does it matter what you do in the world? And then there's the thing that a lot of people say, well, if you're spiritually awake, you need to be out there doing everything that you can to make the world a better place to live in. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways of looking at that. And for me, it's all an inside job. For me to have an impact on anything or anybody or any situation, I need to go within and get clarity with that God consciousness. In energy medicine, the way to relate to that, we talk about the practitioner raises their vibration energetically, and that's from getting centered, that's from setting an intention, and then those who come to that person, they have the opportunity to entrain at a higher vibration of what the practitioner
mm-hmm.
is, and they release their blocks, they release their issues, and I'm pretty certain that that works for anything in the planet. And when I do my meditations, it's not unusual for me to hold every situation on the planet, you know, the conflicts that are going on, the dramas and the traumas, and just hold my vibration for all of that. And for me, I'm not an activist. That's just not a part of who I am, going out there trying to fix things, because I have this little talk that I've given many, 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 many times, that if there's a 1,000 people lined up, say 1,000 men lined up in a row, and one good-looking female walks by, each and every one of those guys are going to have a different attitude, opinion, and belief system about that one lady walking by.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's correct? They're all incorrect. They're all correct. It's from their own belief system. You know, she's gorgeous, she's ugly, she reminds my mom, my ex-wife, my sister, oh, look at those hands, look at those ugly feet, look at those knobby knees, look at those beautiful knees. I mean, everybody will have a different opinion. And when I'm standing in that line of 1,000 people and I notice the person next to me and on each side of me have a whole different concept about that situation that's going by, I know that it's not the person going by, it's me and my belief systems and my attitude and my opinions. And for any hope, because I can't do anything about that woman walking by,
mm-hmm.
or my ex-wife or my job or anything else, the only hope is for me to go into that grace consciousness, that Christ consciousness, that whatever you want to call it, consciousness, and work on me. And I suspect that that affects my environment, and it certainly shows up in my life that way. I have wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful people that I work with and hang out with and have friends with, and I suspect it's bigger than that, that the more of us that are doing that, that it affects the planet, and it affects relationships, and it affects conflicts. So that's what I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that thought creates what we know to be as mass?
Yes, I do.
I do.
Yeah, I'm sure you've on your show have talked about The Secret, and the DVD that's out there, and how it has the law of attraction and how powerful that is. And so,
but I don't think that the secret is completely accurate, because it doesn't talk about the fact of, I don't think we have complete free will. You know, if we had complete mm-hmm. free will, you can tell me what you think about this. If we had complete free will, then I could say, Stephen, meet me at Starbucks at 3:00 tomorrow. And you'll be there at 3:00.
And I'd show up, yeah.
Yeah. And it won't be 5 minutes before, and it won't be 5 minutes after, or you won't forget, or you won't get lost, or you won't get in a wreck, or you won't get caught on a phone conversation and can't get off the phone. You'll be there at 3:00.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't. And I think The Secret forgets to teach that to people, so that they don't realize they have to submit at points in their life to consciousness, because no matter what they think, it's not going to happen. And so they have to accept it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you can certainly look at the message of The Secret from many different directions. And
I mean, it's good. I think it's good.
Very good. And it is very limiting. But what it did for me in my life, as I've been on this path, is, well, and I've known about the law of attraction for years and years and years. I know that it's so important to watch my thoughts, because be careful what you think about, you get it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if I'm thinking I'm going to have a bad hair day, it's, you know, I live in that energy of having a bad hair day. Versus when I first have that thought, if I can say, oh, look at that little thought, that's really not what I need to do. I know who I am, and I know what I'm up to, and I'm just going to have a delightful day, and I'm just going to appreciate everything that comes in my way, whether it's an obstacle or a challenge or whatever. My motto in life is, everything is serving me, and I'm here to serve everything. So when that guy pulls out in front of me, you know, and about wrecks my car, I just absolutely know that I am being served by that process. I can choose that, or yell and cuss and, you know, have road rage, or I can choose to go within and have peace about that. And And the more I do that, the less I have to do that. You know, it works
yes,
that way. So, and so for me, that God, that consciousness, and that grace consciousness, I'm attracting that just by praying ceaselessly. You know, as much as I can, remembering who I am and that there is only one power, not the dualism. And the more I do that, the more grace comes my way. And boy, have I had tough times in my life growing up, in 20s and 30s and 40s, and it's just getting better and better and better for me.
Do you think? Some of the people that I have on my show don't understand consciousness to the extent that you do. So I'm going to ask you some questions that I know people want to hear about. You know, if God was perfect, or if everything was perfect,
mm-hmm.
why would things like the, you know, the Nazi events happen,
right.
or why would there be war happening over there right now? What is your perspective on that from a perspective of consciousness?
Right.
And duality, non-duality.
Yep. It goes back to Genesis, that when God created, it, everything was at grace, and then as Adam and Eve started looking at themselves and saying, oh my goodness, we need to put on clothes, and you know, and they created this dualism, and this consciousness has been around ever since, and that we're born into that consciousness, but it doesn't mean that we have to live in that consciousness. You know, I am living in this world, and I have to stop at the stop signs, and I have to do certain things to take care of myself, but I'm not of this world. I really, my belief system is I know who I am. I am that grace of God consciousness. But we as a population in the world, we create all this stuff because we are creators, and the Nazisms and the killings and all the craziness that's going on is man created. It's not God created. It's man doing injustice to man, humanity injustice to humanity, and there's choices about that. And so I think I'm convinced that everything that God created was good, and then we came along and we muck it all up with our thoughts and our attitudes,
manipulated
and our beliefs.
Manipulated math and thought.
Say that again.
I said we manipulated math with thought, because
yes.
the guns wouldn't be there, or we wouldn't pull the trigger on the weapons if we hadn't thought previously about doing it to know how.
Right.
So
right.
I agree with you on that, and I think that it's thought that's going to change the world.
Absolutely.
Do you have any, from a mystical point of view or a consciousness perspective, do you have any comments on the Mayan calendar and maybe Lester Brown's work about not having enough natural resources to last beyond 2012?
Yeah.
Do you have any comments on any of that?
I just think it's all an inside job, that whenever I hear a prediction or a belief system or an attitude, I don't go there. I go into that consciousness of oneness, of grace, because if you give thought, if a lot of people give thoughts to one thing, it starts expressing. It starts
That's
showing
right,
up.
That's right, it does.
It starts showing up. And scientifically, the quantum physicists are proving that, that we really are powerful people with our mental thinking, and we can create things. And so when any of that stuff comes up, I take a breath, because I want to dive in and, you know, have an opinion and attitude and
mm-hmm.
take a side, and that's my human side of me that wants
mm-hmm.
to do that. You know, I've lived that for 59 years, taking sides, and it's just so natural for me to do in this human form. And so I take a breath, and I say, no, I don't need to go there. I need to go into that higher vibration of that Christ consciousness, of that grace. And And that gives me peace. And I suspect that that peace emanates and goes out to others.
If everybody did that all at the same time, we would have instant peace.
Wouldn't that be something?
It really would.
Everybody would turn around and blink at each other and say, what the heck was that all about? Why were we doing all this craziness? You know? Yep.
It would. So I'm curious. I'm sure you changed a lot from the time that you were young until you changed your perspective about duality. How did it affect your life, your relationships? Because a lot of times, I have allergies here in the South right now. A lot of people, when they begin to follow the path of non-duality, they lose people in their lives. You know, I mean, relationships fall apart.
Yeah.
Things happen. How did it affect your life?
It certainly has had an effect. And you can't talk about this to very many people.
No, you can't. They think you're crazy.
You can't. It's they don't want to hear it or it offends them. You know, so I certainly had a 33-year marriage that separated 6 years ago. And years ago, my wife would say, Steve, you're just a seeker. You know, I'm comfortable with who I am. You're always seeking. And it's like, yep, that's who I am. And, you know, we just kept going in our different paths. She is a CPA, linear logical, and I just needed to know more. And we finally gave up. The sons were grown up finally and out of the house, basically. And we finally looked at each other and said, you know, let's throw in the towel. So that was a big one for me. But it totally liberated me and set me free, and you know, for me to take care of myself instead of being dependent on a wonderful person who did all my finances and bills and taxes and investments and everything else that I didn't have to worry about. So, so it allowed me to become a more of a whole person in this physical world.
Find yourself kind of alone for a while? Because the ratio is not as much.
It's not as much. And I have friends that I don't talk about this with, that I have good friends that know me as a, you know, as an energy healer, but not as a spiritual healer.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach workshops on, I have in the past, how to do healings from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 months ago, I did my last one. It'll probably be my last one because it was just too challenging for me to teach that linear logical stuff again. And a couple of times people brought up the question, well, how do you, you know, because I'd say, you know, this is how I used to do it, and this is what really worked for me for years and years. And so I kept getting this question, well, what are you doing now? And there was about 30 people in the workshop, and lots of them my friends and people that I've known for several years. And so I just gave my little 5-minute speech, and I tell you, I've not heard a word from any of those students
really?
Since 2 months ago. Yep. And usually after a workshop, people are calling me and asking me more questions and this and that, and it's like no one's talking to me, and it's just not something you can bring up publicly. And you know, when you asked me to, when we made the connection several months ago about doing this interview, I just kind of said, well, I'll do it or I'll not do it. I'll just see what happens. And I really didn't know I was going to do it until you called me back today. So, and I was very easily going to let that go because I knew it wouldn't be the right thing to do. And obviously here we are talking about it, and we'll just see what happens.
I lost my train of thought. I was going to ask you a question. Oh, do sometimes you feel like you just don't have anything else to say, and why are you saying it? Because it's not doing any good to begin with because nobody's listening. They are on their path. They're where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. I actually don't say anything unless I'm asked.
Yeah,
unless somebody is inquiring, what are you doing, how are you doing, I just don't go there. And because of the blank stares or because of the belief systems, I don't speak about it unless asked, and it's not very often. I only have one client that regularly calls me. She lives in Georgia, and two or three or four times
That's
a week
where I live,
we talk.
Where does she live?
It's a teeny little, let me look it up here, little place.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, just.
That's okay, I'll get back to it. James, P-E-L-H-A-M.
Pelham.
Georgia. Pelham, Georgia.
Alabama or Georgia?
Georgia. Yep.
Oh, okay.
She's the only one that we have discussions about this and how do I, but Steve, my children, and then we talk about, well, they're really not your children, you know, you brought them in and then she gets it and she's like, oh God. And she's the only one that I can really, that asks me questions. And I work with lots of people. And I just basically say, you know, I really don't need to hear what's going on with you. Just kind of open up your heart and appreciate this wonderful body of yours. And let's hang up and I'll do some work on my side. And that's about all I ever say. And sometimes I get calls back saying, oh, my goodness. And sometimes they don't call back. So I don't talk about it. I just found this inappropriate, and it's not going to do any good unless I'm asked. And then I would love to talk about it, but it's just not anything that I have to do. It's enough just doing this inner work. And the one author I'm just love is Joel Goldsmith. Died in 1963. Has 30 books.
Yeah, somebody sent me a book about him last week, I think.
Oh, he's just, and they taped a lot of his talks in the 50s and early 60s, and now they're on CDs, and I just love Joel Goldsmith. It just sounds like the truth to me. And
some of the things? Assume that we have to assume the audience doesn't know what we're talking about here, so...
Well, it's pretty much what I'm saying. I mean, he's a mystic, called himself a mystic, and he was a salesperson who ended up getting a healing from a Christian Scientist that just amazed him, and then he started studying it, and then he started getting guidance from what he felt was God, and he started teaching, and he'd never prepared. And this was, again, in the 50s, you know. No one talked about channeling or getting messages or anything, and he would get up on the podium, and stuff would come out, and he'd listen to it later and say, oh, my goodness, that makes sense, you know. So it was not of him that was speaking, and... The Infinite Way was his first book. 1947, he wrote it. That's the year I was born. And he was an amazing man and not a huge following, and he didn't want a huge following. He wasn't about money or power. It was about this message. He really talks about that Christ was here to tell us, to teach us about this consciousness of who we are, and that what he did, what Christ did as a healer, we can all do. That he was a human being on this planet, but he was self-realized and had this consciousness with God, that he was a teacher of that. And when Joel Goldsmith reads the passages out of the Bible and he puts this mysticism interpretation on it, it's like, yes, 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 that just all just makes sense to me. So I just love Joel Goldsmith, and I read or listen to him daily. And he was real clear that this is not for everybody, and to just sit and wait. In fact, the first couple of years of his practice, he was told just have an office and wait. And he waited a couple of years before anybody really showed up. And he was just willing to do that.
I'm curious, do you ever hear a high-pitched noise in your ears? Like a high-pitched frequency?
Other than my tinnitus that I've had for 20 or 30 years, no, nothing unusual.
How long have you had that?
Probably 25, 30 years.
And did it correlate with your spiritual awareness?
You know, I've never thought about that. I've certainly been diagnosed with it. I don't
think it's tinnitus. I think tinnitus is tinnier. Does this sound like it does when you go out in the middle of the woods and it's so silent that it's screaming, that real high-pitched noise?
No, I don't have that, and I really don't hear
it
my...
It may not be all the time.
Yeah, unless I sit quietly and think about it, I don't hear it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, but is that how it sounds a little bit, that high-pitched frequency noise?
Because
the reason I'm asking this is because everybody that I know that has come to really understand non-duality,
mm-hmm.
from inside out, has that high-pitched noise.
Mm.
And some of us think that it's, you know, the sound that the original intention was placed upon, it was completely void until that time that the intention was placed. And so that sound that was probably going on was the sound of silence, you know, and even silence
mm-hmm,
is the frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's the sound of silence in your head, and people that get that, it also seems to correlate with high conscious awareness
mm-hmm.
and the ability to manifest quickly. So you have to be careful what you think.
Right.
Have you ever noticed that? That the two came along somewhat together.
I'll start paying closer attention to my little high pitch. I mean, I can hear it now that I'm thinking about it,
uh-huh.
and I
yeah,
probably haven't thought about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. So
exactly.
It's there.
A good thing, I think. And if you talk to
it's
people,
it's all good.
the more aware someone is, the more they hear that noise.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask them about it,
I'll start paying more attention to that.
So what kind of religion did you grow up with?
Parents, we were Protestants and went to church, you know, every Sunday. And I grew up with my parents divorced when I was one, and I grew up with a stepfather who was very self-righteous and, you know, showed up in church because it was the social thing to do, and then was just a totally different person. When he got out of church, very angry, very self-centered, very emotionally charged, and so I grew up not liking church, like going there. And when I finally had options of not going, I didn't go. Interesting enough, my wife belonged to the Church Religious Science, and so I married in the Church Religious Science. And when I started going to those services in Unity, it's like that started clicking in and making more sense to me, more truthful to me. But I've never been, there's been stages in my life when I've gone for a few months here and a few months there, but there's too many thou shalt and thou shoulds, and it just doesn't sound like truth to me. It just sounds like man-made rules. And again, I love Joel Goldsmith, who brings out scripture, and it's like gives it, he says it in so that it sounds like truth to me in consciousness and non-duality speaking. So if somebody asks me what my religion is, I just say I have no preference. In fact, that's usually what I said when I was in the military. I just had no preference.
That's the way I feel. Like I say I'm oneness right now. I don't know what else to say anymore. So how did your kids, how did they react to it?
Well, they had fun when I was involved with Healing Touch. I mean, they both went to workshops. Even my wife, cooperated and took a couple of workshops and helped me out at workshops just because she was kind of obligated. Thank God she never asked me to go to a CPA meeting. So she was very good to, you know, trying to understand what I was going through. But and she would occasionally ask, you know, I've got a headache or something. But the boys, we've always had fun with it. I remember when they were in high school one time, the quarterback had the real hard block, and they had to kind of help him off the field, and both my sons and their friends started working on him from a distance, just kind of pulling the energy off of him. You know, they were 50 feet away from him, And when a play or two, the guy went back out there and made a touchdown. And they came home and woke me up. And said, Dad, wait until you hear what we did. You know, they took credit for all that. You know, so they've been pretty easy. And I haven't really talked to them about where I am now. One of them did finally watch The Secret. The other one, he and his wife, have never watched The Secret. Just to open a door so I could start talking to them. And I'm okay with that. So it's just, they're wonderful. They're both in their early 30s and wonderful sons and living great lives. So I'm just happy for them.
It's kind of funny. My children bring people into the house and warn them, don't have a conversation with my mother about being sick or about God, because you'll be sitting here for the next 5 hours.
Well, I've actually had them when they were, you know, growing up with me, bring a friend over and say, hey, Dad, Jason needs a session. And poor Jason would not know what the heck's going on. I had one time they brought this guy over. He was so angry. And he says, nothing's going to work when I get like this. I'm like this for days. And I said, just lay down on the table here and let's just, you know, give me 10 minutes to see. And I just cleared and cleared. I just, my hands in motion above the body. And just lots of heat and lots of stagnant and just did it, and after 10 or 12 minutes, he sat up and said, Mr. Anderson, I don't know what you did, but it's gone. He said, what happened? It's gone, you know. He just had no idea, because he usually held on to that anger for days, it sounds like. So occasionally, I you know, they'd bring their friends over to have them worked on. And so they were pretty open to it and pretty respectful of it.
And what about, I guess, how much time do you spend meditating?
At least a couple hours a day.
What do you do to keep your field, that's what I was going to say, what do you do to keep your field cohesive?
Again, I have these CDs of Joel Goldsmith, and I go to sleep listening. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I have this little remote on my CD player, and I play him, and once I get up and go to the bathroom and take care of myself, I go back to bed and listen for a whole nother hour. So at least a couple of hours of, and when I'm listening, I'm getting into that space. I just so appreciate what he has to say, and sometimes I'm with him, and sometimes I'm just in my space. And then during the day, it's just whenever I can think of it, and it's usually when I think of it, it's when the little upsets come, you know, when it's not quite going my way, that I can take a breath and just remember. And so I do it a lot, and sometimes I'm busy for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 hours and I just forget, but everything's going smoothly and flowing, and then it's usually the little upsets, it's like, oh yeah. And I take a breath.
And it really does work in an instant, doesn't it?
Oh, it's wonderful. It'll work in an instant, but then I'll stay with it for a minute or two or three, just for appreciation of, gee, isn't this nice? I don't have to go there, you know.
It changes people's lives. If people would only believe us when we tell them to stay in the moment and that thought manifests their lives.
Yeah.
That's the goal of this show, actually.
Have to be experiential, where they, and that's why I loved Healing Touch so much. It got all walks of life, and it's a very active program still that brings people into a higher consciousness and more aware of their capabilities and possibilities and what they're made of. So
now, is that all over the world, or is it located?
Yes, it actually is. They're in many, many countries. Europe and South America, South Africa, Australia, very active in Canada. And it's a wonderful, delightful program.
Is it something that somebody can go and take classes in to
It's a weekend
certified?
Workshop. It's a weekend workshop, and there's 5 workshops to get all the way through to start to prepare you for certification. And then they have their own certifying body. So it's kind of an internal, but it's getting more and more recognized. Again, they've been at it since 1990 was the first year.
Well, I'm still amazed that the Navy allowed it. I mean, well, Western medicine don't even
It's the people in the Navy. It's not the Navy probably didn't know what was going on, but we certainly touched. I taught over 75 workshops at different Navy hospitals.
That's amazing. Yeah, that really is amazing. I mean,
nice
the Western medicine battles it so much, and here they've been doing it there right under their nose, and it was doing great things, and they didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, do you have any special stories that stand out in your mind? We've got about 8 minutes left that you like to tell before we hang up. Everybody usually has a story or two.
Well, there's so many things. I just appreciate your questions because it's so much to talk about. Not too long ago, the lady in Georgia called me, and she was just a wreck. Just a mental basket case, was almost talking suicidal, at wit's end. Just had been at it for 6 or 8 hours, and Steve, is there anything, you know, I know you can't do anything, but I gotta ask. And I said, just hang up and lay down and let's just see what happens. She called me the next day and said, my God, I slept for 11 hours. And she wakes up every hour or two. She just has always been a fitful sleeper. And she says, it was like being almost in the same position all night, and I didn't even have to get up to go to the bathroom. And it's like, I can't hardly remember what the issue was yesterday.
How much time did you spend on it for that to happen?
3 or 4 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 3 to 4 minutes.
That really is amazing.
But then tapping in, you know, it's like any time that I'm doing my self-care, I'm aware that anybody in that I have a relationship is probably experiencing some of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell us one more time the website where people can find out about what you do and how to, if they were interested in doing
that's,
it.
I'm not involved with Healing Touch anymore. Their website is healingtouch.net. And I have just a one-pager website that actually they're correcting something, probably won't be back online until Tuesday or Wednesday, and it's steveshealingsite.com. So HEALINGSITE, steveshealingsite.com. So steve-healingsite.com. So,
thanks so much, Steve.
Yep. You're welcome.
I mean, we don't have to hang up right this second. We got another minute or two. But
okay, I was just going to say that I don't charge for sessions, and if people want to donate, I take donations. I have a real job out there where I go into hospitals and teach nurses how to work with new IV pump equipment. I'm a per diem and do that pretty regularly. But I love doing the work, and I don't depend on the income for doing it, so I do it as anybody needs it, and certainly accept donations as they come too. So,
and
love to.
Is your email address on your website?
Yes, it is. Yep.
You want to just say it?
Sure. It's Steven, STEVENRN at hotmail.com. So StevenRN at hotmail.com.
Well, that's a very honorable thing to do, and I respect you for it.
Oh,
thank you for doing that for the world.
Thank you.
And if you ever write a book, call me. I'll have you back.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Steve, and I appreciate you coming on. Agape, my friend.
Oh, God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.